you are all welcome to this portfolio committee meeting. Even before I go to the apologies which I have in front of me, I want to let members aware that we have to do everything we can so that our meeting must end at 1, because there is another committee that is going to use this venue at 1 o'clock. We must bear that in mind as we discuss. Having said that, though, I have some few apologies to make. I have an apology from Minister Mtunu. They have a cabinet meeting, but I'm told let me register this apology for now. If they do come, we will welcome them. Thank you very much. Is there any other apology? Because I have this written one only. Honorable Soma.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Good morning, colleagues and honorable members. I just want to register, in case I have to leave the meeting early, that we are busy preparing for the Section 25 public hearing. So I'll be meeting with the parliamentary security people to look at the logistics, Chair. Thank you.
I'm told by the Secretary that he has also received two apologies from Honorable Malati and Honorable Schreiber. So the Secretary has received those apologies. The Chair of the Public Service Commission, welcome, sir. We are not going to waste your time today. We are starting immediately with you. You can, as they are still busy setting up, we have hard copies here. I suppose everybody has. So you can take us through the copies we have whilst they are still... The IT guys are still busy setting up. Over to you, sir.
Thank you very much, Chairman. Good morning, members of the Honorable Committee. I'm accompanied by the Director General, Dr. Mampiswana, and also I'm accompanied by the Chief Financial Officer, Mr. Zweli. We will take you through quarter two and quarter three, and Dr. Mbiswana will run you through the process. Thank you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members, Honorable Chairperson of the Public Service Commission, and the colleagues. The presentation of the Public Service Commission in terms of how it's structured, the outline of the presentation on page two will present the second and third quarter performance report. In that, we'll show the summary of the two quarter reports, and then we'll indicate the performance per program and the key outputs. We'll also present the report on the implementation of audit action plans as at December 2019. And then we'll finalize by second and third quarter report on irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. Honorable Chair, in terms of the summary, on slide four, the Public Service Commission would like to present to the Portfolio Committee that the slide shows that the Public Service Commission had a total of 21 annual performance plan targets, and for quarter two, we had 12, and the 12 milestone targets of this quarter were all achieved. With regard to quarter three, we had 11, and then all 11 milestone targets for quarter three were all achieved. We'll also like to indicate to the Portfolio Committee, Honorable Chair, that the substantive work on annual targets due in the last quarter, which is the fourth quarter of the financial year, has already started, which will mean that we are on target to achieve all the targets that the Commission had set itself for the financial year. Honorable Chair, just on slide 5, we'd like to indicate that the Public Service Commission had a budget of 278 million, and on this part of the budget, in terms of the norm of the third quarter, we should have been on 75%, because on quarterly basis it should be 25%, so that by the end of the fourth quarter we are on 100% in terms of our expenditure. However, during the third quarter we were on 72%. It's 72% mainly because of the following reasons. The two reasons in terms of the goods and services, Honorable Chair, that the CETA delays the Public Service Commission in the procurement of the new video conference facility. This is one area that is mandatory. It has to be done through CETA. And then the Public Service Commission could not deviate on that, so we needed to rely and depend on CETA. Secondly, the accruals as at of 31st of December amounted to 2.1 million, and the spending rate, including accruals, was 72.8. Therefore, it was not within the norm of 75. However, we would like to bring to the attention of the Portfolio Committee that the CETA has since procured the services of the service provider to install the video conferencing within the Public Service Commission. Therefore, by the end of the financial year, this exercise would have been completed, and then we would have evened up in terms of our expenditure. On slide 6, Honorable Chair, we just want to indicate that in terms of the budget of the Public Service Commission, we were within the norm, but we just want to indicate that with regards to transfers and subsidies, we had overspent. And how did we overspend, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members? The reasons are on slide 7. Here we like to indicate that the transfers and subsidies as of the 31st of December, the reasons were the following. 1.6 million was spent on transfers and subsidies against a total of 1.4. The reason is that within the time under review, or the period under review, we had two officials who retired, and when they retired, they had what we call capped leave, and therefore the capped leave days that they had to be paid. And in this regard, for an example, we are showing that there was one official who had 154 capped leave days, and out of those days, because he was at director level, he was paid 574,000. And another one was a deputy director who had 131 capped leave days, and then was paid 389,000. So that's the one that therefore led us to overspend. With regard to the payments for capital assets as of 31st of December 2019, we just want to indicate that because we upgraded our security, we spent 364,000, and 1 million was spent on the furniture. Honorable Chair and members will know that the Public Service Commission moved into a new building. And when we moved into a new building, the square meters as per public works, they are now reduced. So the furniture that the PSC had in the past moving to the new building, some of them were bigger than the space that we had, so we needed to buy new furniture in that regard. And also to indicate that the laptops, which are key tools of trade, certain officials had aging tools of trade and then had to be replaced. I think I would like to bring to go straight to the programs, which will start on slide 9. Perhaps just to indicate, Honorable Chair, if it's agreeable with you, that the Public Service Commission, because we've already indicated that all the targets were achieved during the second and the third quarter. That's why you will see on the far right, Honorable Chair, it will say achieved. And then you will see the first one will say quarter 2, and then below it will say quarter 3. because we are presenting the two reports at the same time. So that helps the honourable members to see that that has been achieved. We might just want to indicate, honourable chair, that outside the annual performance targets, Public Service Commission continues to do other work which might come as a request from the executive, from the stakeholders, including the parliament. And on that one, I would like to draw attention of the honourable members to slide 14, because this one will indicate that with regard to program one, program two, which is the leadership and management practices, there were certain products that were, the commission was requested to undertake, and indeed commission undertook within the two quarters. Just to give an example here, we'll say the first one, the Public Service Commission participated in the orientation of the new members of the executive at both national and provincial level on its guide on governance practice for EAs and HODs, which was aimed, or which is aimed at assisting EAs in understanding the legislation underpinning the management of organizational structures, human resources, finance, and integrated reporting, which is part of the administrative role. This exercise was meant to assist and orient the new executive, both at provincial and national level, to settle in their new roles and their responsibilities. And it went very, very well indeed. And then, of course, like I'm indicating, that there were others, like we can go to bullet number three. I'm just picking another bullet. The Public Service Commission hosted a roundtable on the extent and nature of contract appointments in the public service in November 2019. Again, this is informed by the 2016 regulations, which then regulate how appointments should be done in the public service, particularly with regard to the contract appointments, because it says that it must be within 12 months. If it is beyond 12 months, then the EAs must be requested to indicate that. Then the other ones were done with the partnership with the stakeholders in terms of universities. The PSC, realizing that it has got gaps and challenges with capacity, it establishes partnerships with universities, and various universities offer different products through which commission partner with in order to achieve its constitutional mandate. With regard to M&E, I would just like to indicate that, again, as every target was achieved, key to this was an engagement with regard to the promotion of constitutional values and principles, which underpins the public service and administration. And the commission is committed to doing this because it is important to empower public servants in how they interact with the public, with members of public. But there were products that were done outside the APP, which this branch has done, which we would like to bring to the attention of the committee. And the key to it is the one that I would like to draw the attention on, bullet number four, which will be the second one from the bottom, is that the Public Service Commission, in partnership with South African and EU strategic partners, conducted a dialogue, and this dialogue was meant to conducted under the themes values-driven public sector, building a state capacity through professional ethics and integrity. From it was done on the 30th of September to the 1st of October. It was well attended, and with stakeholders from both civil society, public service, and universities, and even international partners. They strengthened the view of how to ensure a value-driven public service, which I think is central in terms of building a developmental state as we aspire as the country. That was one of those that were done outside. But again, there were other inspections that were conducted. Inspections are important in the commission because they help the commission to establish the real-time stories on the ground when it comes to service delivery. Again, on slide 17, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is the branch integrity and anti-corruption. It also exceeded its targets for the two quarters, quarter two and quarter three. As honorable members can see, what was achieved, 94 and 96 on both quarters. But we would also like to draw the attention of honorable members to the slide 19, because what slide 19 does, it says, outside this planned work, There have been other activities that commission conducted, and they were the following. And again, just to draw on one of them, in fact, two of them, which we think are key and central, is that the Public Service Commission, in partnership with United Nations in South Africa, the Thembekile Mandela Foundation, and the Moral Regeneration Movement, in July 2019, held a seminar at the Tshwane University of Technology on ethical leadership under the theme "Leading Like Mandela: Dawn of the New Era of the Ethical, Values-Based, and Conscious Leader." Very exciting initiative that drew a great deal of participation from various stakeholders in effort to build an ethical public service. The next one, which was also key, which we thought we should also bring to the attention of the honorable members in this forum, is that the Minister for Public Service and Administration, with the support of the Public Service Commission, in partnership with the United Nations Office on Drugs and Crime, United Nations Development Program, in December 2019, commemorated International Anti-Corruption Day at the University of South Africa under the theme "United Against Corruption, Building a Culture of Accountability for Sustainable Development." Again, it was a well-received initiative which continues to deepen understanding on the importance of fight against corruption. We would just like to also bring to the attention of the commissioner, of the honorable members, on slide 20, that Commissioners Nzimande and Commissioner and Mutembu are participating as like caretaker commissioners in the two provinces where there hasn't been appointment. Commissioner Nzimande is with KwaZulu-Natal, and then Commissioner Mutembu is with Mpumalanga, where those appointments haven't been finalized. Honorable members, I would like to go to Section B. What Section B indicates is the implementation of the Audit Action Plan, but would like to indicate to the honorable members that our progress has been significant. Our progress has been very significant in terms of addressing all areas that the AG identified in the previous financial year. And that's why if you look at the schedule that we have, it's green and blue. What green and blue mean is that they have been achieved or they are ongoing. And ongoing in the sense that some of them will only be realized in terms of finalization by the end of the financial year. But we are happy to say all the areas that the AG identified, the commission took conscious decision to monitor them and put systems in place to ensure that they do not reoccur. Because when the AG comes this time around, they will look at there, they will start there and say, the issue that we raised before, did you address them? And if they are happy with the fact that we have addressed them, then it is a positive step that the commission will have undertaken. I would also like to then talk about the irregular, the Section C. In terms of quarter two and quarter three, we'd like to talk about whether within these quarters there were irregular, fruitless, and wasteful expenditure. The commission would like to report the following, that during the period under review, we had irregular expenditure of 370,000. This is a recurring one. I think honorable members will recall that during the 2017-18 financial year, we procured a data warehouse, but we did it outside the CETA, and then CETA, then AG said no, you can't do this out of CETA. But this is the last year for this expenditure to be recorded, so it will be concluded by end of this financial year. During the period under review, we didn't have any fruitless expenditure, and there was no wasteful expenditure. The expenditure, like I said, the one of 372, is a carry-through effect of a multi-year contract for a mandatory service. That's the data warehouse, as I've indicated. Thank you very much, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members. That's the report of the Public Service Commission, Chairperson of the PS.
Thank you very much. Let me, before I allow members to engage in discussions, let me welcome the Deputy Minister Chikunga. Yeah, we were made aware that you are on the way. Welcome. to this portfolio committee meeting. We are also aware that some of your colleagues are held up in the cabinet meetings. Members, the report.
Thank you, Chair. Chair would love to welcome the presentation from the Public Service Commission and we think the details from the Commission, I think they were giving the real substance of the matter. But I wanted just to check, I think, on the, in terms of overspending, the cap leave that you spoke about, my question is, firstly, you mentioned so many days that those officials had, and those days led to sort of a huge amount that was supposed to be paid out. Then my question is there any way of controlling employees in terms of the days that are converted to money? Is there any way of controlling it? Because it, if it has happened now, it will happen again. Have you devised a strategy for the employees to take their leave as and when it is needed, rather than keeping so many days that will cost the department at the end of the day? But I wanted also to check in terms of the new furniture. You see, I thought maybe we were going to say you had a surplus of furniture because you had a bigger space. Now you were moving to a smaller space. But it was vice versa. Can you elaborate on that one as to how does it happen? Having been using a bigger space, now moving to a smaller space, but compelled to buy a new furniture. The program outside the APP, was it a new, totally a new program altogether? Because for me, the APP is there to control you, is for your planning, in a way. Now, if you can now have a program out of the APP, was it a compulsory program? And I heard it was a very fantastic program when you had, was it compulsory for you to have it within that financial year, or you would have maybe adjusted yourself to the new financial year to accommodate it, to put it in your APP first before executing it. And lastly, your ethical values, that is very important, living like Mandela, but I wanted to check if you can, if it is possible, because it's for leaders, leading like Mandela, yeah, if it's possible to go to an extent for the ground to living like Mandela, which can also contribute a lot to the social cohesion. That is my take for now, Chair. Thank you.
Black.
Yes, Chairperson, I'm also concerned about the amount of money that's paid out on leave. I know that there is certain stipulations in terms of HR policy that you have to take a certain required amount of leave annually. You're forced to do that. I'm not sure if it's changed. It used to be 10 or 12 days. But is it now 21? And I know that it's not an easy issue to deal with because it's, in actual fact, it's policy that needs to change. So, but perhaps it's something that needs to be looked at because as this current economic situation we face ourselves in terms of government bloated government employee bill, we're certainly going to have to look at cutting where we can. So I would very much like to know if there's any thinking of looking at that policy, and obviously that would have to come to this committee because we are the legislatures, and look at that and see how best we can deal with that. Thank you.
Maluleke.
Thank you, Chairperson, and we also welcome the presentation by the Commission. Chairperson, I just want to add on what Honorable Makosi was saying about the overachievement of targets. You said this other target is because of the added responsibility. But then how does it affect your budget? Who's funding those other added projects that you undertook? And also I would like to find out the outcome of your unannounced inspection at Cecilia Makiwane, Fiere Hospital, and the school that you visited. What did you find on your visit there? And also I would like to find out what were the outcomes of the round table on the extent and nature of the contract appointments in the public service. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Malobane, and then Honorable Sibisi Gabekulu, in that order.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation by the Public Service Commission. My question also is based on the overachievement, is that when you planned, did you maybe not plan correctly because you could add other tasks or APP so that maybe you will overachieve? Because if maybe you were planning, it was supposed to, or you did, let me say that didn't you underplan so that maybe you can add other things on top so that you can overachieve. The other question is that you said you were having a code of conduct program, promotion of the code of conduct. What I want to know is that were there any challenges raised by the officials during the promotion of the code of conduct for the public service, given the drive by government to root out corruption and to implement public service regulation? If so, what are they? Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Smith.
Thank you, Chairperson, and greeting to the colleagues and the members. Mine will be different. In fact, I wish to give credit on Program 2, where we have seen the much achievement in terms of grievance management. I think previously it's where it's the area where the PLC was lacking. So I wish to say congratulations. At least we have tried in quarter two achieving 86% and quarter three achieving 85%. That's a great work. I wish to recommend you. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. On the Nyukela program for senior management services, how has the uptake online been? Does senior management services enroll in it without being encouraged or? That's too far. I thought maybe I have a bigger voice. I was on the Nyukela program, Chairperson. For senior management services, the question is: how has the uptake online been? Does senior management services enroll in it without being drawn into or encouraged to come to join, or does the uptake percentage so far been improving or increasing in their numbers?
Yeah, thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for the questions asked by honourable members. I've just been looking at the list. I missed honourable member. I missed your name. I couldn't see the face. Yeah. Through your chair. I just wanted to know so that I can answer it properly. No, I just wanted the name of the honourable member so that I can just know.
Maloman.
Okay. Thank you. Okay. No, thank you very much. Honourable members, the question of the cat leave that has happened is part of the settlement that we had during the negotiation. It's part of the sunset clauses that was given to the previous public servants. So when they cross over after 1994, they cross over with a lot of leave that was kept, which we could not remove, and so on. So when now they are leaving, they still have them because we also gave them some leave after the new year. But that cap leave is not there for the current public servants. They have only the 21 days, and we manage them to use only if the Director General asks you to stay either for 2 or 3 days, not to do that. But it's only for the sunset clauses for the old public servants. So it's no longer applicable now. It was removed. So we are just closing up that period of those protection of the rights of the previous public servants. The new furniture is not in all the places. It's very few areas where the new furniture, honourable members, was. What happened is that previously Public Works had bigger spaces for offices, but now, because of cutting up and also ensuring that we reduce rent, all offices, be they the commissioners and for officials, have been reduced. So there were certain offices now where the big tables could not come, which had to go to Public Works and were given to other departments. So in those few areas where we could not, we then had to get some furniture, because the offices and the office space has been now reduced. You no longer have those large offices with flashy furnitures. The offices are quite small, and we also had now, for instance, previously many directors and others and senior people would have one office, but now largely people are sharing. You'll find there are two or three. to reduce the space. And I can just say, honorable members, for us, where we were before, we were paying over, was it over 1.8 million. And now where we are, we have reduced by 800,000, which is money now that has actually gone to projects for us to do, to show the reduction of space and so on. We're paying 1.8 million. Now we're paying 1.2 million, and we actually saved about 800 million. That's really what happened. Honorable members, again, the Public Service Commission, I would urge you to at least, I mean, without, we never really get praises, but we would like to get praise for this one. The extra projects, what we do is that because the money is short and there is so much work that we have to do, we have actually gone out on a fundraising and partnership model. So these are funded by the United Nations development thing. These we partner with universities like UNISA. We partner with universities in Kimberley and others. And we get some of the funds to actually help us to work on this. And we then provide our researchers and officers to do that. So as a result of that, we are able now, when there's something that is agile, to do that. For instance, we have the Zola Square lectures, which are offered by Dr. President Mbeki. Then we partnered with UNDP, with the Tembekile Mandela thing, to have the leading like Mandela at UTT, and they provided us a free venue, and then the UNDP funded it, and so on. So when we get things like that, and things that are urgent, we look for funding, and that funding adds to the things that we do, and then we shift officials to assist with that. But the main projects and targets, that's what we aim to achieve, because that is what the budget is for, so that we don't budget over. But we try to actually stretch the budget by having MOUs and also fundraising. And also ask sometimes when, because we also, what also has helped us, we fall under the budget of, as of now, which is an advantage. We fall under the budget of DPSA. Sometimes when they have seen that they have an over, Treasury allows them to transfer some money to us because we are within the same budget, so that we can able to close certain gaps that are there. So that is what happens in dealing with that. Honorable member.
Just a follow-up on the one that he was responding to.
Yes, thank you.
I just want to find out, with those donations and your fundraising, when you do your annual report for the AG, do you also report on those donation and fundraising?
Chief Financial Officer.
Thanks, Honorable Chairperson, Honorable Members, Chairperson of the Public Service Commission, DG, ladies and gentlemen. Indeed, donor funding gets disclosed in the financial statements, and it is that there is a, you may notice that the programs tend to be funded by using various means. Firstly, the initial appropriation, meaning from the transfers from Treasury. And there are instances where we do get donor funding. That money gets declared. Donor funding must be surrendered to National Treasury. Then National Treasury, they will appropriate it back to us. But it gets disclosed on the financial statements, and it's part and parcel of the books. It gets audited as well. And we use competitive PFMA regulations, as well as National Treasury led instruction notes to spend such money.
Thank you, Chairperson. Okay, I would like to go back to the first question of the cap leave. On the cap leave, isn't it a days of the employees? They didn't finish their days when they were on leave. Maybe they have given 21 days, but they have taken only 20 days. So the 5 days is the one that are being kept. So when you say those cap leaves that are left, you have been removed them. So I don't understand. I understood that you are saying that the 5 days that is left for the employees, you are throwing them away. Maybe can you clarify on this cap leave, because I didn't hear you clearly.
No, thank you very much. The cap leave, there was the period before 1994. Officials during that period who worked for the South African government had quite a number of days that they had not used, which were quite a number. Others had 300, others had 200 and something. So there was an agreement that leave, they would need to use it, as and they do use it, and if they have not used it, if they have to leave or retire, they must be paid. After 1994, what we have done, we have put it on managers and officials. We have insisted that there is nothing like kept leave. You've got to use your days, but use them periodically. You take 10 days here and so on. There is leave. When then we close, there is also 5 days that might be taken and so on, and you finish them. But it might be that your manager, because of work, when you have to take some leave around July, because usually it falls off by July if you have not used it, what they might ask you to say, no, I need you not to go for these 3 days. Then there must be an application to pay for those 3 or 4 days, and so on. But the notion that an employee can keep his or her 21 days and claim them as cap leave without any planning and approval is no longer allowed. But that one was an agreement that was made constitutionally at the negotiation.
Honorable Clark wants to make a follow-up. Okay.
Thank you, Chairperson. There's just one issue I wanted to ask the department. When you did the promotion of the code of conduct with government officials, is there some system in place to ensure that these kind of programs you run has these positive outcomes? You know, I'm a very much an outcomes person,
yes.
So if you do something, you must have some monitoring tool in place to see that you have positive outcomes. Do you have something like that in place?
Okay, thank you very much, madam. I have not yet reached that. I would answer that when I reach it. Thank you very much. Honorable member who asked about the reports on Cecilia Makiwane and Frey Hospital and even Military One Hospital, those reports are available. There were also the commissioner in the Eastern Cape on Frey and so on, release them in public. And the state of our public health is not well. So, but there are promises to improve it, because Cecilia Makiwane, for instance, has been improved. But if the, through you, Chairperson, if the committee would want to engage with those reports, we can come and present them, because it's really seriously an area which must be looked at quite closely, and the outcomes are not very good. And I can even say, for instance, even Military One Hospital used to be the top hospital before 1994. Presidents and others are sleeping there. But if you were to go and ask from the MK soldiers and others who sleep there, they are begging. I walked right through the passages. I led the military one. They are asking to be removed to the private hospital and so on. And really, most of them are not getting full treatment. We did report to the Minister of Defense about it. So the issue of hospitals, and again, if you look at the SED mini problem that happened, you look at Mamelodi, where a lady was chained and some pregnant women were sleeping on the floor. It is a problem. But when you talk also to nurses, there is really a problem of them saying that we have some free health, but there is no medication. And then you find a number of people, for instance, who are dying. Look, for instance, in Gauteng as of now, because of these problems, Gauteng is facing about 20 billion medical negligence because of that. So it is a serious area that we must deal with it. Eastern Cape, the SIU is there now fully because the lawyers and the doctors are creaming off the system that is happening about it. So it's one area that we must look at, especially as we're going to the NHI. The Public Service Commission tries, but it does not have the full capacity to do it. It's a very serious one.
What is the contract the next day?
Okay, the contract report was presented to the committee by Commissioner Moira and the findings that relate to it. And so the members of the committee have that report and its findings. Honorable members, let me talk about the code of conduct and the rooting out of corruption. The code of conduct is there. And the code of conduct covers almost everything imaginable. It's a very wide document that you can find and deal with it. And we do promote it. The DBSA does circulate and promote it, and the School of Government does also help to do that. And also in departments, they have orientation for new people that are given. There are even induction courses about it. But I must just say that when we analyze it, there are some challenges that are there because officials sometimes, because there are processes that are there, and also the senior officials, there are problems in applying the code of conduct and the processes dealing with the disciplinary code and everything that needs to be looked at. We do want commissioners to look at the members to look at the issues of precautionary suspensions, where people stay at home for long hours and so on, and the thing doesn't happen like this. And there are, for instance, even in the disciplinary and code of conduct things, issues relating to that. After 60 days, you must already have appeared before a disciplinary committee, and people actually are not charged before 60 days, don't appear before the committee for an extension, and when they come back, they are again suspended. And one of the things that is important is a problem in the disciplinary code of things is again the marginalization of officials who are complaining rightfully about their own rights and so on. But there are also officials who really abuse the things, who of course do corruption, who do business with government according to the code, and also abuse things relating to leave and other things. So it's a matter that cuts both ways, but we are trying to do training and improvement and also bringing in the values for people to act consciously, to act. But I would not say here fully that the code of conduct is fully implemented and respected by officials. And there is some abuse relating to it. Thanks for the things of the grievance management. The grievance management, Mr. Kirekul, is a very important element of the Public Service Commission sitting between the executive and senior managers and junior managers to ensure there's no abuse of power or using power over it. But I must just say, it's not as effective as it is, because we deal with a complaint of a junior official or two or three and sort it out in a public service that is basically 1.3 million. What we would have loved is to actually get money, which we don't have now, to actually go to departments, to go to all the departments, to engage them on promoting labor relations so that we can actually train them on leadership, we can train them on people management, we can train them on dealing with the regulations and rules, we can train them on the thing, but we don't have that capacity. So now we sort of deal with a problem that comes late, and again our processes unfortunately delay and take 3 or 6 months. So it's an area that creates bad relationship, low morale, and sometimes make officials either leave frustrated and so on, because we're not really that effective in dealing with it. But it's an area that we're trying to deal with it. So I agree with you, but it would be good for us if we can do promotion of labor relations so that departments themselves, I usually say when I talk in the departments, we would succeed as a Public Service Commission if we don't receive grievances. But the more we receive grievances, the more it indicates the problems that are there in departments, that this management is not happening well to deal with them. The chairperson had answered that question. Is right. The issue relating to senior management is an NSG question, so I will not venture into it.
Chairperson, if we could request a report on the suspensions, officials that have been suspended longer than 60 days, and just also to give us an explanation as onto every case, so that we as the committee can actually look at that and see what the actual situation is at this stage. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, I wanted to assure Commissioner, Advocate Suzanne, that indeed we are appreciating some of the programs that you have embarked on.
Other members seem to suffer to what I would call microphobia.
Oh. Okay. No, I wanted you to assure Advocate Suzanne that indeed we appreciate the programs that they have embarked on. Hence, once earlier on alluded to them to say they were detailed and they seem to be of high morale. But I wanted to go back to what, because I meant business. You see, Chair and the meeting, in my previous life, I was the Chairperson of Arts and Culture. And at some stage when the xenophobic thing popped up, one saw a need of the social cohesion not to be for certain group to look at and to take care of, but for the nation to join hands, to say, having been embarked on this ethical leadership under the theme leading like Mandela, now I was taken to say, I understand here you are in partnership with other entities or groupings, but can't you take it, may extend it to from leadership, also cascading it down to the communities? It can start with the smaller Nyana communities, because I understand the frustration of the and the constraints of the funding, to say leading and living like Mandela, uniting nations, for us not seeing other a person from Mozambique like a certain of some sort, someone from Malawi, etc., taking from them some of the examples that when they were in the camp, we wanted to sort of take those with the small babies outside the tent, but they were saying, no, we can't leave our husbands here, you know. And again, when some of the men were ordered to leave the country, they were saying, but we've got children here, we've got a mother of our children and children here. Now I am saying this program that you have started might bear fruit for us, for all nations to combine, leading and living like Mandela. Mandela gave freedom even to the animals. We had the transfrontier, whereby you've got your elephants going to Mozambique, your elephants going to on the other side, Botswana, Shashe River, and so on. Yeah, I was just checking, because your program here is very meaningful. Thank you.
Honorable Soma.
Thank you, Chair. Probably in terms of, I hope NSG was listening to the presentation of PSC. Let me qualify why. Because they are saying that there's a gap in terms of senior management training, in terms of labor-related issues, implementation, which means then NSG must also review its curriculum in the induction, so that it includes that. Even a continuous induction must talk to that. It might have, so that at this site also we can say, in 6 months' time, are there any difference or what? But also the issue that Honorable Member, which I want also to make an addition, raised in terms of getting pending disciplinary issues in terms of their categories and all that. It should be a joint report, Chair, with DPSA, because DPSA, we were told, I hope that approach is still there, in terms of that there is a special committee that is created in terms of all levels, that they can also assist depending on what level of senior management those cases are, so that we can also speed up the turnaround of time. But to include that, Chair, because we are also oversighting in financials also, if we can get a report that talks to how much then has been spent, which if we're respecting the turnaround time, we would have saved one way or the other, Chair. Thank you.
But what the honorable members are saying, and I will do so.
Okay. Then let me thank you, Advocate Susan. Thank you very much. You are free to stay on, but if you feel like leaving, you are free also to leave. Let me now invite the National School of Government. But before the presentation is made, I would invite the DM to just preview the committee on what is coming. Just before the presentation by the National School of Government, Honorable DM, your comments?
No, thank you very much, Chairperson, Honorable Members of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration. We thank you.
afraid of a mic, but you are just that far, far
okay.
from it. You are not afraid of it.
Okay. We thank you, Chair, and the honorable members of the Portfolio Committee on Public Service and Administration. And we thank you for affording us this opportunity to appear before you to present our second and third quarter expenditure. We're doing this first. I think it's proper that I tender the apology for the minister. I think it was done, but also I think it's proper that I do it because the minister is indeed attending the cabinet meeting. However, he requested that I attend so that we are represented and he too is represented. Also, maybe to say in the near future, the minister will be introducing a newly appointed DG for the department, and also he will be introducing to yourself the new principal of the school to yourself that will have been appointed. But also, Chair, we all know that today the Minister of Finance will be presenting his budget speech to the nation, and he will be calling for all of us to do our best with the minimum that we will get from him. And also, we will be expecting that the minister will say a lot around what now is priority number one, which is building a capable and capacitated state. And also, I want to believe that issues related to the spiraling of the wage bill might actually be commented on by the minister, which indeed is a problem. The advocate, as he was referring to quite a number of litigations that are happening, for instance, in the Department of Health, that is another matter that requires our attention. But some of the things that we are observing, Chairperson, are quite interesting. Yesterday I visited a clinic. They're having 8 posts, and 8 of them are filled. But 7 of those are professional nurses and only 1 staff nurse. In the past, it would have been maybe 3 professional nurses, that is sisters, and probably 3 staff nurses, and probably 2 nursing assistants. Nursing assistants that are going to do the basic things like your testing of urine, your weighing of patients, your taking of temperatures, and all those things that can actually be done by a nursing assistant. But what is now happening is that those things are supposed to be done by registered nurses. And that will definitely have impact on the wage bill because the sister gets the highest salary amongst nurses. And progression, salary progressions, they happen whether they are promoted or not, but they still qualify to get promoted at some stage from being a professional nurse to being a senior professional nurse. And that might actually be something that we look into as a country to say, we moved into this, but the consequences are that you have somebody who's doing something that can actually be done by the most junior nurse at a clinic. So most of their budget, for instance, in that clinic will therefore be going to the salaries as compared to what it would have been if they had the staff nurses and they had the nursing assistants doing exactly the same thing with a lot of understanding and training that would have happened. But having said that, Chair, I always say to people seated here, there are thousands and thousands of people that are being discharged from hospitals today because they are fit to go back to their families and they are fit to go back to work. We never talk about that. The only time we talk about issues in the Department of Health is when there is a medico-legal hazard that was referred to by the advocate. And when that happens sometimes, then it becomes the issue, which is, of course, the issue. And that is why in the health, you don't speak of mistakes. It's a medico-legal hazard.
because somebody can take you to court, and that is what is happening today. But it's not new, Chase. It's not new in South Africa. The floodbeds have always been there. They've always been there. It's just that today people know that we can go to court and report these things. My sister sustained 69% burns and was admitted at King Edward, 1989. Instead of going to ICU, they admitted her in a normal ward, general ward, sleeping next to a diabetic patient who had septic wounds with fresh burns. She was sleeping next to a patient with septic wounds. She became septic and she died. We couldn't go to any law court to report and sue the hospital because we would not have received anything anyway at that time. I'm just making an example. At the time, you would have one ward taking not anything less than 75 patients, be they medically ill and so on. Today, we have beautiful wards that are accommodating 35 patients or beds. What are the consequences of that? Something that we have not done, which I think we need to do, is then to say if Thembu Hospital had a 75-bedded hospital, and now they have 35-bedded hospital, that has reduced the number of beds from 650 Thembu Hospital to 400 and something, but the staff establishment, the organogram, is still talking to 650-bedded hospital. So you have people that are supposed to take care of plus or minus 200 patients who are roaming around and literally doing nothing. So you have those discrepancies, which I want to believe we need to look into as the department to say, how do we ensure that as we build these beautiful beds, I mean wards, what to do? So I'm just saying that there are issues that are interesting. Some that go to the media may not necessarily be very truthful. I just want to cite one chair before I allow the chairperson to say something. In December, we had in the media a story about a pregnant woman who died in Limpopo because she was waiting for the ambulance to transfer her to another hospital for a cesarean section. It was the issue, it was in the media. But when I heard about it, I said there must be something seriously wrong about this. Because normally you don't transfer a patient from a hospital for cesarean section. Because any hospital in South Africa has to perform a minor operation such as cesarean section. But the fact of the matter is that was simply not true. But it was in the media, it sounded very true. The patient had actually been confirmed as having eclampsia, a dire pregnancy-related condition. Wanted to be admitted and have the pregnancy terminated, refused, went home with a letter, said, please go back because your organs are failing. Went home, did not go to the hospital. On the day when going to the hospital, did not bring the letter, the new hospital now in Limpopo. So she becomes a new patient. At the time she goes into, she had seizures, that is, fits, and they were still, trying to look into that. They were phoning the hospital. So the transfer was for a patient who required an ICU bed because of this failure of all organs, including the brain, hence the seizures. But in the media, that was the story. And it reflects so bad to the Department of Health. But the fact of the matter is the facts were not correct. So I'm just making an example to say we do have some of these issues that are happening and we're not saying our public health is on top, but it has always been like that. I just want to say that. It has been like that. Probably it has been worse for the black-only hospitals. It was even worse than what it is maybe today. I just wanted to say that, Chair. And as the NSG is to present its report, Chair, we want to say to you, Chair, they will be telling us that there are targets that have been met. There are some that have not been met. Maybe when they started
at the beginning of the year they were a little bit slow. However, this has improved, and we're hoping that by the end of the financial year they shall have met all their targets. They have a program which is breaking barriers to entry, which we think that it's supposed to be their flagship project, because we need it for the intent, and we will actually be requesting that they ensure that this program happens and they meet those targets. But Chair, I just want to say to stop there, and we'll allow Ms. Pindi, the acting principal, to present the report for NSG. Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you, DM. Thank you, Chairperson. We're doing a presentation for the second and third quarter of financial organizational performance and financial performance. We're going to do a high-level summary, and looking at the time, that our time for presentation is actually over, we'll focus on quarter three, mainly going through more of the details of quarter three than quarter two, if the Chair allows. Okay. When we look at the executive summary, for quarter two and three, we started off with a very slow uptake when it comes to training, but we've seen that it has improved. For quarter two, we have trained 16,303 learners against a target of 26,548, which was 61% achievement, and we generated 56 million. But in quarter three, we saw that it started picking up. We managed to achieve 73% of our planned target. We trained 28,550 learners against 39,137 in all the streams. We managed to raise revenue of 90 million. The training delivery against the annual target is at around 53%. We have seen challenges around the induction program, and we have put plans in place to try and ramp up the induction so that it covers the backlog that they've suffered in the first two quarters of the year. BB2E, this is a program that is aimed at interns. It's breaking barriers to entry, and it's also aimed at the youth unemployed graduates, where departments are able to fund, then we are able to deliver the training. Within this period, there were changes that have affected our performance. The TSA came up with a new directive that said now the contract for interns should be extended to 2 years instead of 1 year, which meant it affected the numbers that we had planned. You have already trained those people, you can't train them on the same program again. So that has affected the numbers. We are trying to work with other departments to see how they can help those who are geared up towards the unemployed, so we can be able to offer the program. In terms of the APP targets, 16 out of the 27 targets were achieved in quarter two, and this resulted in an achievement of 62%, and 23 targets were achieved against 30 planned in targets in quarter three. This represents overall achievement of 77%. Part of the highlights that we wanted to bring forward, Honorable Member Kodekule has already had a question around the new Gela program. We launched the Senior Management Pre-Entry Program in July 2019. This actually becomes effective from the 1st of April this year, 2020. So we started early to roll out this program. Currently, we have about 440 people that are going through the program. It requires them for them to apply for a post in senior management or a promotion. They need to have the certificate to show that they've completed the course. So we are seeing that there is a pickup. There's more people showing interest, so they're in the process of completing the program. So it's going well so far. It's basically online, so people do their own learning themselves. It's not facilitated. They pay for it for themselves as well. So it's an easy to do. If they plan their time well, they can do it within a period of a month and a half. We also created a program aimed at salary level 4 and 5 that aimed at looking at performance, making performance my responsibility. This is to help public servants at that lower level to understand how they impact on the performance of the department. We also launched three modules for the new local government development program, which was delivered to councillors at the city of Johannesburg, and it ended in November 2019. We also had mandatory programs that we rolled out, and we targeted the Northwest since it was under administration. We worked with the with our college, the Ikastrong School of Governance, to plan for the training of their of the public servants within the Northwest province. They've taken up training for about 1,019 officials to be trained, so from that time up to end of March this year. So it's still it's an ongoing project with Northwest. We also worked very closely with DPME, especially now that we're going through the new way of doing the strategic planning with the SIP administration taking over. We managed to train 1,490 officials on the theory of change for planning. So this they've seen as a big plus in that people are now able to do and submit planning programs that are strategic plans that are more relevant and are easy with less more errors. As I said, I will skip quarter 2 information and go directly to slide 15, which now focuses on quarter 3. The highlights for program 1, we had 12 targets in program 1, 8 of which were achieved and 4 were not achieved. The highlight says that we've managed to implement 87% of the management improvement plan on the AG findings. Some of them can only be completed at the end of the financial year when AG actually comes and confirms that everything has been done, but they are ongoing process, so we're happy with the process that we will not have any issues with the AG. The average number of days collection is at 40 days. Our target was 60, so we're doing well with that target. All of our suppliers are paid on time. We also, when it comes to information sharing, we participated in the African Governance Seminar in Nairobi as part of sharing the best practice through learning, development, and peer exchange. We also continue on with our monitoring of our ICT disaster recovery solution, and that is done twice a year. Some of these achievements have said. Part of what we have to do is, part of our indicators to provide capacity development platforms for African public service institutions through AMDIN initiatives. This is where we deal with other African countries. We were able to do some training around CAIEDU where we used our flagship program for service delivery and shared it with other African countries. It was translated to French as well as Portuguese. So it has been delivered and it's accepted well. So it's giving the NSG the footprint to get into other countries and influence how they also perform in the public service. The other meetings that were held were part of what was planned. We also sent some of the of our colleagues in other departments as well to for training in Afghan, which they had training on local governance. The targets that were not achieved in Program 1, our vacancy rate, we have a target of 10%. Our current vacancy rate is 12.6%. This is due to 30 posts that are vacant. Some of these posts need to be abolished from the structure because they are not funded. One of the Deputy Minister has already indicated that the post of the principal has now been filled and the post of the DDG corporate management has also been filled, so this will reduce our vacancy rate. Our revenue is set because of the low uptake. We are behind with the revenue target. We have put in place an integrated marketing team to try and promote the courses, as well as the area that we know is of big concern is under induction. We have created a program, accelerated program, and trained some of our internal staff and others to help us to ramp up the numbers so that we finish that training by the end of the financial year. Okay. The sum of the target was that we were going to do a training with the Chinese, the way they were supposed to come and do information sharing and train some of our public servants. They had postponed the training to February, and it's going to happen now in March. So that target will be achieved by the end of the financial year. As I said, the one for INA, where people were going to be trained there, they have managed to go in January, and the training has happened. We're now waiting for them to come and do a seminar where they share with other local government staff on what they have learned in that course. For program two, which is the one that focuses on training, we had 18 targets that we had to perform against in that quarter, and 15 of those targets were achieved, only 3 were not achieved. Some of those highlights is that we did 6 research projects and 15 training needs analysis. We hosted research curriculums workshops, and then we also had the concept implementation plan for the assessment center that has been developed. 26 evaluations were conducted on training programs, and drafts of 6 courses have been developed, so they are now in the development stage. Cumulative of 18 courses were quality assured through this process, where some of the courses have been existing for a long time. They went through the process of checking their relevance and then being updated and then quality assured so that they can be rolled out. We continue to offer 26 online programs, and we also did training of trainers sessions, about 9 of those in this quarter. Then to move on to also highlight targets that were not achieved in slide 26. We have a target that we will train 33,737 new and current serving public servants. We've managed to train 26,565. This has been, we've seen a low uptake in some of the client departments. We have put processes in place to improve our marketing, and we've been going out and talking to departments. We've been also engaging with even the communication department, GCIS, to help us send through messages around the programs and when they are happening. We are doing a fast tracking of the CIP, which we now call it accelerated CIP, to help those departments that have not finished and they have a backlog on CIP to finish those programs. That's targeting mainly on levels 1 to 12. I've explained on the BP2E that there is a challenge because of the change in the contractual arrangement from 1 year to 2 years. We will relook at how we do this program going forward, since we will need to be more creative and not only target the interns, but look at how we can find funding so we can target the public as well. We had a target for programs that were for mandatory courses which were approved by the cabinet. We plan to train 2,700 people. We then started working with the Northwest, and at the time they took up all the training slots, and they said they would manage, but when it came to them sending people into class, they had a challenge. So we managed to train only 544. They still have some training that needs to happen, and we are in constant communication with them to see how we can help, but we have put measures in place to also give this loss away to other departments that have challenges that can benefit from this kind of training. Okay. Slide 28 then talks on overall showing the number of people that we needed to train. and the actual achievement shows that in total we trained 73% of the target. As indicated, the one that is struggling the most is induction, where it's got 43% against its target, and then the BB2E, which is at 53%. The human resource oversight information, as I indicated, we have vacancy rate of 12.6% due to 30 vacant posts. We are in the process of abolishing those posts that are not funded, with the view that if anything changes, they can be recreated as they need. But the organization is also looking at our structure and seeing if we are fit for purpose, especially looking at the demands that are required by the SIP administration. So it might have an impact on which posts we keep, which posts we do not keep going forward. When it comes to equity, energy has a fair representation of gender. We have 58.7% females, and females at SMS are at 56.1%, and the youth is at 25%, and people with disability at 2.9%. Now, looking at the financial information, we will also skip the second quarter and focus on the third quarter on slide 83. For the financial year 2019-20, we have a budget of 187.9 million. For the April to December, we had a budget of 140 million. We actually spent 123 million, which is, there's an underspending of 60 million there. Mainly, there's the underspending is on compensation of employees with 2 million there. As I indicated, we now have the appointment of the principal, and the DGG post has been also been filled. Going forward, we will not have the savings on the compensation. But for this financial year, we will have these savings not being plugged out, because it's at the end of the financial year when the appointment happens. When it comes to goods and services, we had some projects that were behind schedule because of some personal issues where some of the suppliers didn't meet the requirements, and we had to restart the procurement process. We are confident that those things will be done by the end of the financial year, so we don't see that we will have an issue with underspending on goods and services by the end of the financial year. On the trading account, the target for revenue, where we generate our own revenue, for April to December, we had a target of 106 million. We managed to raise 90 million. This is directly linked to the numbers of training, which are low, so our revenue will be low because of the numbers that are not as what we had planned. When it comes to actual expenditures, the compensation of employees is also low against the budget. We do have vacancies here as well that are not yet filled. Some of them were put on hold pending the appointment of the principal, and they're also looking at the structure and how we want to be structured as the organization. So we'll see that with now the principal being in place, all these things will start being implemented and we'll not have this problem in the next financial year. Goods and services, we planned that we'll spend 19 million, we'll spend 76. There's a saving of 14 million there. This is direct link with the training. Our costs go up when we have more training, so there is a bit of savings around that area. That's the end of my presentation, Chairperson. Thank you.
Madam Chair, to then recap, I think the Chair will notice that on the issues related to the payment of suppliers, the school is doing that within 30 days, and I think they should be commended for that. But also that when it comes to their staffing, all demographic groups are represented in the school. So you've got your Africans, your white, your colored, and Indians represented properly. But that we also have people with disabilities
at 2.9. Remember, the minimum requirement is 2%, and we are happy they can actually be 200%, but at least they do meet the requirement as per what we agreed upon. Where we have a challenge, Chairperson, is on the issue of low uptake of courses by clients. Remember, at some stage, we actually had said departments must pay up front and then people must come. What we are seeing is that even if they've paid, but still people may not come, those who come may not finish the course. And we're looking into that as a department, including the school, to say, how best are we going to deal with these issues, including naming and shaming names people that are supposed to come for the course, and they come for a day and they leave, because it cannot be. It's waste of money, it's waste of time. It actually says the school cannot plan properly if that is happening. So we're looking at quite a number of options so that the clients, that which are departments in the main, government departments, be they at national, provincial level, can actually take these courses seriously, and it is this value for money. Thank you very much.
Thank you, honorable members. This is open for discussion. Honorable Soma, honorable Nduli, Malovane, and Muzipe.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Probably, it's not directed to you, Honorable DM, is that sometimes we have a difficulty of uploading the fish for swimming on a lighter note. But also, let me just raise the 3 points, Chair. I'm just looking at my notes. Probably, Chair, through your good self, to the NSG and DM. If the school is adding value in terms of their training that they provide, because they also, I'm making an assumption here, they look at AG's report in terms of the skills shortage or areas that we need just to check up to remind senior officials. Do we then have a tool of measuring our, I'll call them students, to say, in this 6 months you have been in this intensive training in terms of upskilling your good corporate governance and compliance skills, as it were, financial management and all that, based on AG's issues, how, is there any value that we get from that, and what are really issues? Because there is something, Honorable Chair, that probably DPSA together with PSC needs to talk to, because we cannot continuously getting qualified audit reports and disclaimers and all that, because there's a thin line between the minister and the DG, but there is something that needs to be looked at there. That scientifically, where do we miss the boat? Because there's somewhere that we're missing. That's one, Chair. It's a proposal, not even a question, Chair. The second one, Chair, I'm happy that, no, I'll skip this one because you've already dealt with it. But also the other one that we have raised, I think towards the end of the year, the NSG, using my own term, configuration. I'm relating that, Chair, with a slide that talks to the human resource capital, where you are going to abolish some of the unfunded posts. And you made a reference to say that to align yourself with the sixth administration. But does it link then to the DPSA configuration of the public sector, as it were, and its process, because it should be aligned? The other one that I'll recommend is that probably for us as NSG to be relevant in the public space where we operate, is that what makes other departments, like for an example, DERCO, has got its own college that is Munti. I'm not too sure how far they are. That means then the departments are not talking to each other, whereas there's no manager. But the entity or the unit or the body that
it's mandated, looking for a better way to deal with that, is NSG. Because they are indirectly liquidating ourselves as NSG. If we can look at that and see how do we close that. I know they go beyond, but if it can be better housed within NSG, because we're one government and we say we don't have money, I'm raising that also in terms of a limited budget that we have as a country. The other one that I would say probably, if you want, Chair, they can respond to, why do you put targets that you know that are beyond your control? It has been an ongoing concern. And I'm saying it needs to be looked at. I'm not saying that underestimate your predetermined objectives in terms of targets, because figures don't lie. But why do you put figures that you've got no control and it has been a perpetual issue? The other one, Chair, because they spoke about local government, have we managed to have a collaboration, areas of collaboration with SALGA in terms of training also, so that also we can make ourselves very more relevant instead of just relying on ourselves? The other issues are issues of management, of people not showing up in training, ill-discipline, nothing else. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson. Thank you, National School of Government, for your presentation, and also thank you, DM, to expatiate on some of the issues. I wanted to have a rider to what my colleague Nemi had alluded to earlier on, to say in terms of local government, this is the sphere that is closest to the people, and this is the sphere that you are seeing a lot of protest. Maybe we should think ahead to say we've got councillors that may be not at par with the work that they are doing that causes that leads to those protests. So how can you, as the National School of Government, make it a point that you have maybe some sessions, maybe twice a year, with a local government, despite the training that the local government that exists with local government right now, whereby it goes to an extent whereby they graduate, etc. But to put them on par, on what are they for? That is one. Two, the Nyugela Ntontoni is meant for senior management. Compulsor. I think this committee has mentioned more or less the same previously, to say, can you have a program that is compulsory to all levels to also stabilize performance audit? That performance audit can go back to say how many times is it done per year, so that everyone is backed up. And taking this National School of Government very serious, other than what has been said by UTM, to say someone will come just for one day and leave, someone would not come at all, because for that one is for the department to put some measures as to how they are dealing with such culprits. But for us, as the National School of Government, we want to see the performance, the public performance being done adequately, how do we then roll it out in a way that everyone we are nje emsebenzini ujabulile because we are uthanda futhi uyawazi umsebenzi wakho. In terms of to the non-achievements, I think you were going to have some problems with other countries and there is that non-availability of the state. Now, I wanted to check something here. Can it be possible that we establish a commitment fund from the very other countries? That is reversible anyway. But if they don't pitch up, they'll forfeit it. So that we have a way to say if they are coming, there should be something that is compelling them to come. The role of local government, I've touched on that. I wanted to check in terms of officials being given the opportunity to undergo training outside the country to say, do we have a program of a trainer of some sort to say what they've obtained from the other side? We are able also, they are able also to decentralize it within the country. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Let me also welcome the presentation by NSG. My question, it will be based on page 29, where about the human resource oversight information, is on the issue of the 208 posts which are filled and 30 vacant. As you were presenting, you presented that there are posts that need to be abolished on the structure. How many they are? Because now we are still speaking about 30 vacant posts. How many are going to be abolished? And then how many posts that are funded on the 30 posts? But I know now I do have an understanding that two posts have already been filled. That means it will be 28. We'll be speaking on the issue of 28 posts. The other question, it will be based on the issue of local government development programs. It's good that you have started the training you've done with the city of Johannesburg, the training that you have done. But I just want to say, can that program also go to the other municipalities if you have already done to the city, as you are going to plan for maybe this financial year, the next financial year? Can you also, the program goes to other municipalities so that it will help us? Because as my colleagues have alluded on the issue that local government is the basic, it's where people, the councillors are working closer to our own people. So if they can be also given those kind of trainings, I think it will assist, those modules will assist our councillors on how to deal with issues and to manage the municipalities of the ward. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Yes, I'm covered by Honourable Lusoma about, you know, aligning the training with SOLGA as well as the NSG. But I also think that there is a need to look at MPLs and MPs as well. Because I can tell you, I so often experience that MPs and MPLs are elected and they haven't spent any time in the local government sector, and they've got elite constituencies and actually don't understand how to deal with local government issues leading their councillors on the ground. And I think that would assist, you know, MPs and MPLs from that point of view and legislation and so forth as well, because I don't necessarily think we get enough training when you land here first time and you've never served on any other level of government, to assist you and equip you to do your job properly. Thank you.
Thank you, Jefferson. I also like to welcome the presentation and then also to applaud you for increasing the level from level 4, because it was struggles for the long time, not any increment for the level. But on that level, increment from level 4, meaning that the entry level is going to be level 4. And I would like to ask that, did you look into that for the past, before the levels can be improved to level 4, the employees couldn't even have the bond, the medical aid, because their deductions were minimum of 6,000. So have you looked that when they are on level 4, they will be able to get some benefits on that level? And again, I would like to, when you increase the level, have you also considered that level 6, most of the level...
Honorable Mzibe, okay. This question is for DPSA.
Okay.
Yeah, it's still coming.
All right,
keep it. It's for DPSA.
All right, thank you very much.
Thank you. Honorable Soma.
I apologize, Chair. I'm raising this one because the DM have raised it. The issue of, but also the presentation talked to this, the issue of the internship 2 years from 12 months, that Honorable DM, at your engagement with other departments, you must also assist all departments in terms of the 12 months to 24 months unbudgeted for, because it's the same issue that you're raising in terms of health and the hospitals and the clinics, whereby we modify the hospitals in terms of bedside numbers and all that, and then it doesn't talk then to the shortfall, how do you augment it. But I'm saying in terms of the your intake as well, we must look at that one to say how do we balance that one, because the 12 months to 24 months is unbudgeted for. And we're saying the departments must cut the cost. But also we want to train our young people so that they get friendly with the working space environment, as it were. That there are good intentions, but they don't look at the overspill implications. Thank you, Chair.
Response?
Thank you very much, Chair. The principal will respond to the easiest questions, and I will take the most difficult. I'm joking. Chair, on the issue of departments establishing their own scores, it is of concern to us, and I think it's something that we need to take up with those departments. We are happy each time you mention the department, because it's something that we need to talk to. We do have a National School of Government approved by Cabinet and everybody, and it is supposed to provide training to all public servants. Unless we say we can't do this, then of course we've got to look into that as to how best can we deal with that. Otherwise, of course, there will be a lot of duplications and wastage of money and so on and so forth. So it's something that we are happy to discuss with all departments. The issue of targets that are dependent on other people outside the National School of Government is indeed an issue, because it talks to targets being smart or not smart, being able to be achieved or not. However, sometimes you don't know what to say for an institution such as a school that has to plan for its intakes on the basis of the resources that they have or that they hope to attract from departments. If, say, for instance, they are saying we will want to get 20,000 rand, that has to talk to the numbers.
and they must get the 20,000 rand. Then the problem will be if they get the 20,000 rand, but the numbers are what we are talking about. You know, people prepared to pay, but they don't ensure that that is followed up by the number of people that need to be trained, or I mean, 20,000 rand. So that becomes an issue, and a little bit difficult as to what exactly do you say to an institution such as a school that works on the basis of numbers, and it works on the basis of what other people are doing for it. They may end up not having targets. So that will be the issue, but I think it's something that we need to look into to say how can we help and solve those issues. On the issue of training of politicians, the minister actually was saying the school has to probably find even a course that is relevant for ministers and deputy ministers. I'm not sure about president and deputy president, but for ministers and deputy ministers. And if we are saying even for MPs and MPLs, it's something that we might have to look into as well. But parliament and legislatures, provincial legislatures, must be prepared to pay. They've got to budget for that because it's not for free. It has got to be accompanied by a budget so that the school is able to do that, because it cannot do it on the basis of whatever budget that they have. But I think it's something that is important for us to consider seriously. I fully agree that you are appointed as a deputy minister. You don't go to any tertiary institutions for the training of being a deputy minister. And you do need somebody who actually can say, this is what is expected of you. These are the legislations that cut across the public service and so on and so forth. And these are the issues that you need to look into. You just get in there, the following day you have to sign submissions and approve things, and you are still trying to find your way and footing, and you're expected to do the work. So I think it's something that the school has to look into. In fact, the minister was talking about ministers and deputy ministers, but I think also if you are saying it should be extended to other politicians, I think it's something that we might have to look into. Of course, getting approval from those institutions such as parliament as well as legislatures, and of course municipalities, if that has to be extended to municipalities as well. But I think they will look in, they will respond to that. The principal is here. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, DM. I'll just answer to those that DM hasn't covered, and I also note the comments and the improvements that the members are saying that we need to do. On the issue of the human resources plan to be aligned to DPSA's requirements, yes, we have to, once we've come up with a new structure of how we need to look like as the NSG, DPSA will play a role in approving and making sure that we comply with the requirements that are needed. So that will be done. The issue of collaboration with SALGA, yes, we've been working very closely with SALGA in some of the programs. We assisted them when they were training counselors in the previous local government training. When we had new counselors, we trained their counselors. We had a meeting with them yesterday where the MINMEC for COCTA was addressing certain issues that they have. They do want more programs that target the local government, so we'll be working very closely with them. There is a program that we currently are piloting for traditional leaders, where it helps them how to interact with their communities and how to also raise funding, how to write proposals, how to give feedback to their communities so that we don't have the uproars and the strikes that happen. So when we gave them the feedback of how the training is happening, they indicated that they wanted that training to go to all other councillors as well, not only the traditional leaders. We had also piloted it with the CDWs, so they want it escalated to a bigger audience than what we had targeted. So we are in the process of working with them, and there will be more programs that will work with them. On the issue of compulsory programs for all, yes, we already have the induction program that's compulsory for all. Then we have other programs that are targeting certain levels, and especially those that work with finance and the supply chain, so that we make sure we don't have those audit findings. So those have been made compulsory. They will be, we are waiting for the directive to be completed by DPSA, then they will be made effective in the new financial year. I did indicate that we do, when we send people on overseas training, we expect that when they come back, we do a seminar and call others in the same area. If it's local government training, we'll call others that didn't go on that training to come and listen and hear what those people have learned on those courses, so that we make sure the information is disseminated to more people than just those few that benefited with the training. Then on the issue of the post that needs to abolish, within program one, we had about three posts that we had to take off the structure, but we're still in the process of finalizing that, because we do need to consult with DPSA on saying some of the posts might be critical. They might advise us how best to deal with those things. So that all that work will be done. We cannot just write it off quickly. We have to look at the implication on the organization. So we had prioritized about eight posts on program two that were going to be filled. I think because this report is end of December, other than the two I just mentioned on program one, there were about three of those posts that were filled already in this period. So there is movement in that, and we will make sure that we apply ourselves and not create a problem for the organization. And we welcome the invite to make sure that the training that we are dealing with the city of Johannesburg, we also translate it to other municipalities. We do want to assist, and we work closely with SALCA and all the other stakeholders on that. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I will now invite Center for Public Service Innovation. Presentation from you. You must try to be a little bit faster so that we give the department the full hour with everything, questions, answers, presentation of the department, taking into account what I said when I opened, that there will be another portfolio committee meeting here at 1 o'clock. Thank you. Floor is yours.
Thank you, Chair.
Okay.
Thank you, Chair, honorable members. I'll be presenting the second and third quarter report for the Center for Public Service Innovation. Maybe before I start, Deputy Minister, I don't know if you have any opening remarks before I go into the details.
No, thank you very much, Chair. Indeed, they are going to make the presentations, but maybe safe to mention, Chairperson, that again the center itself is able to pay its debtors and whoever within the 30 days period, which is exemplary performance by state institutions, but also that they've not incurred any unauthorized or irregular or fruitless and wasteful expenditure, which I think also will be recorded under the period under review. And I think for that they need to be commended. There is, Chairperson, the work that is being done regarding the placement of the center. The minister has actually requested that we undertake a feasibility study, so that we know as to where they are right, or whether they should come to the Department of Public Service and Administration. So that work is still going to be undertaken. And as of now, there is still no decision as to whether they will be absorbed into the department or they will remain where they are. But of course, there is some work that is being done in that regard as a way of feasibility study. Thank you.
Thank you, DM.
Honorable members, this idea has just come into my mind.
maybe we must allow the center to present now. Immediately thereafter, the department comes in, we reserve questions. When the department is through, we question all of the presentations. Of course, I can't take that decision. I want agreement from you, honorable member. Are we in agreement? Thank you. Let's do that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I will be very quick to save on time. As you can see, we are all under pressure for time. The presentation will cover all those areas as indicated on the content slide. I'll skip this one, but it's for the period until December 2019. Over the two quarters, the second quarter, we had a 67% achievement of targets. And with regard to the unachieved targets for that quarter, one of the targets that was not achieved was then achieved in quarter three. And I'll talk to that later on. And during the third quarter, we had a 75% achievement of targets. The target that was not achieved in quarter two related to the hosting of the Public Sector Innovation Conference. The conference was held in the third quarter under the theme Public Sector Innovation, Design Thinking and Foresight. What was special about this conference is that we had mini training sessions to introduce new concepts that relate to innovation. So delegates were actually trained or workshopped on how to use design thinking to improve service delivery, how to infuse foresight into planning. The other two targets that were not achieved for the two quarters will be achieved by the end of the fourth quarter. I just want to highlight, honorable members, on slide six, the issue around the implementation of the external audit recommendations. As we are now at CPSI, we have achieved, it's slide eight, achieved 100% of implementing the recommendations by the external, by the Auditor General. I will then move to slide 10. That gives you the targets that were not achieved, which I've just mentioned that we are confident that both of these targets will be achieved in the fourth quarter. On the financial information, slide 12, we have spent 59.68% of our budget by end of December, which is a concern to us as CPSI. Our norm around this time, based on our plans, is around 67-68%. But I will explain to you what caused this underspending as I move to slide 14. On slide 14, because of the reasons that the DM has mentioned, that there are plans to do a feasibility study to see where the CPSI would be better placed. In that sense, we have underspending because the post of the ED is unfilled and it will not be filled. So we also have other two posts which are critical posts in terms of compliance, that's the supply chain officer, and the other one is the person who's responsible for planning in the organization. Those posts are filled through contract posts. So we expect that by the end of the financial year, we'll have a 1 million saving on those posts. There's no chance that we'll be able to fill this post by the end of the financial year because the other process is unfolding. Moving to slide 15 to explain the under expenditure under goods and services, one of our key contributors to understanding in goods and services is that members will remember that the CPSI used to have their own accommodation. And last year in February, we moved to the department, sort of sharing the same space with the DPSA. And we had money that was budgeted for these over the medium term. And for the current year, we have about 4 million, which we are unable to spend because now we are with DPSA. We are not paying for the space. We're only paying for minimal things like, you know, if there's pest control efforts or there's infrastructure, then they will sort of bill us for just that part. So we have underspending. We had initially thought we'll use that towards
things like tenant installation, upgrading our servers, upgrading our websites and other things. But unfortunately, because we were informed in December last year that there's going to be a feasibility study, we thought it was not prudent for CPSI to spend on, say, upgrading servers when we know that a year or so down the line will be within the department. So we thought it's not wise for us to do that investment in that sense. There is also other, you know, savings. For instance, with the conference, it's quite minimal. It's about 200K. On projects as well, first bullet, we expect that 200K to be paid by the end of the financial year to the Innovation Hub to assist us with the development of solutions. So in goods and services, 4 million that we'll not be able to use. But I'd like to say to members, honorable members, that once we move to DPSA, those money will be reprioritized into other areas. But unfortunately, we don't know what the feasibility study will say. If it says move to DPSA, will it be as a branch or will it be, you know, put in other branches within the DPSA? I think, Chairperson, I would like to also mention, slide 17. We didn't, some of the savings was because we normally train people on public sector innovation, but like I indicated, the plan this year actually already issued terms of reference to train public servants on design thinking. Design thinking is about putting the user first, and it actually tallies with Batupili, what Batupili is trying to achieve. So it's something that we want to work with the school to see if they can put these new concepts that talk to the 4IR as part of their suite of courses, so that public servants are then empowered to solve problems in an informed way based on these principles like foresighting and design thinking. I will move over to the finances on slide 19, just to show honourable members the spending in various components. It ranges between 38% to 68%. So that reflects the underspending that we're currently experiencing because we cannot fill posts, we can't invest in infrastructure, big infrastructure projects. DM has already touched on the slide, so I will not go there. Our vacancy rate is just above 10.5%, and it will remain that until the end of the financial year, or until the feasibility study advises the minister where to place CPSI. The vacant executive director post, these things have changed now. We had a secondment from the presidency, but that secondment ended on the 14th of February, and I stepped in from the 17th of February. Most of our SMS members are females, and people with disabilities, we stand at 5.8%. I thank you.
Honourable Dumas.
Chair.
Thank you very much, Chair. I think that covers the presentation for the centre. Coming to the Department of Public Service and Administration, the acting DG will make the presentation, but Chair, safe to mention that the second and third quarter reports were audited by the Department's Internal Audit and Risk Management Directorate and were submitted to the Minister for the Department and, of course, to the National Treasury and the Department of Planning, Monitoring and Evaluation by the required deadlines. Maybe also to mention, Chair, that the President in his State of the Nation address indicated that priority number one for this administration is now a capable and capacitated state. That actually puts a lot of pressure. It's not like when we were priority number six, we didn't have pressure, but I think what it actually says is that for anything that government is doing, this will be the priority, not only for the Public Service and Administration Department, but for the whole government, and I think at all levels. And I think it actually says we need again to remember that we draw our mandate from the Constitution as this department, which sets out the basic values and principles that the public service should adhere to, and of course from the Public Service Act. And of course the National Development Plan is very clear on what we want to achieve by 2030. And therefore it becomes critical that as we do and present our achievements and targets, but we seek to say how far are we in as far as the achievement of those targets that were set for us and that are set for us by the National Development Plan, but also the Constitution itself and other legislation. We will be presenting to you what we have achieved in both the second and the third quarter as the department, and we'll be ready to take questions after that. Over to you, Acting DG.
Good afternoon, Chair and honorable members. In the interest of time, with the Chair permitting, I'll only focus on the third quarter as well. No.
I need to go there.
In terms of the performance for the department in the third quarter with 26 targets, 20 of which were achieved, and the 6 targets that were not achieved, details I will give as I go through the presentation. We also are indicating the performance trends over the first to the third quarter, indicating that in the second quarter we came very close to achieving 100%, but our performance in the third quarter went down a bit, and it's something that we monitor every month to make sure that where the targets were not achieved in the previous quarter, we track where they are, and I can confidently indicate that as at the end of December, the 2 quarterly targets in quarter 2 were subsequently achieved. We are also monitoring the third quarter targets, the 6 that were not achieved, and we'll be able to give an updated report when we come to present on the fourth quarter. In program 1, as the committee will be aware, that the program 1 is what in other departments is called corporate services. It's mainly about compliance matters that are regulated through the Public Service Act as well as the PFMA, and we're indicating the various reports that we complied submitting to the different control points, including National Treasury, DPME, as well as our internal risk and audit committees. And I would not spend a lot of time under the budget. The CFO will take us through what the actual spend for the quarters have been. We also do our own internal compliance monitoring. One of the challenges that has led to some of the targets not being achieved in terms of the compliance is that Program 1 in all departments is responsible for implementation of more than 100 policies in terms of HR, labor relations, finance. And in this quarter, DPSA, we had lost a number of our staff in HR, and as a result, we were not able to catch up with the number of reports that we need to submit. However, we have since appointed the staff in HR, and we are anticipating that going forward we'll be able to achieve 100% compliance. We also monitor the implementation of the department's MOUs with bilateral and multilateral programs. And I think worth noting in this report is that the department is currently implementing work around the APRM. As the committee is aware that we, that the Minister for Public Service and Administration took over the chairpersonship of the APRM at a continental level, which happened in Ethiopia on the
6th. Chairperson, I'm sorry, we have a challenge here. I think what the DG is present, we don't have at all. Maybe it's me who doesn't have any.
My apologies.
No, it's not even there.
The first copy excluded the third quarter report. The second copy that was just circulated now includes the third quarter report, which should be starting at slide number 23.
Maybe the problem, Chairperson, is that the pages, they are not
sure
in sequence. Sometimes you find 30 on the other page, then 31.
Yeah. I think the updated report is not what has been uploaded here. So maybe so that I don't confuse, can I just talk to this presentation?
The one in the copy.
My apologies, I thought that it was actually just... Okay, so there is an updated report that I think was not submitted. So can I just request that I refer only to this presentation that was circulated now, starting at page 22.
Okay, what you are saying, I don't know whether the acting is, but
Linda.
Miss Linda, is that you will also direct us where you have made some amendments, so to speak, and then talk to them.
Okay. So I will still then talk to the old presentation. There isn't a lot of changes. It was just the formatting in the updated one. So what I was indicating then is that the minister took over the chairpersonship.
I see. Inkosi isenkingeni manje inkosi ifuneka sisoloko sihloniphile inkosi uprebeko bakusizile. Okay, thank you sir.
So I think the at least in this slide number the what is on the presentation and what in the document is aligned. There's also a problem with the numbering. So it goes from 31 to 28. So if the numbers are okay, can we just then focus on the screen rather than the document to avoid confusion? So I was just indicating then that the main program that the minister will be leading for the next 2 years is the African Peer Review Mechanism. As the South African government, we have just appointed new members of the National Governing Council, which is a key forum or structure of the APRM that is responsible for, amongst others, the second generation review that we'll be undertaking, hopefully in this year's budget permitting. We are currently engaging with National Treasury because in the previous years, they have not been very useful in giving us the money that we need to conduct the review. The review was also postponed because of the national elections that we had. So we are hoping that at least by the end of this year, if not concluded, we would have started the process of the review. The next program is program 2. Which is what we call policy development, research and analysis. The department, starting about 2 years ago, embarked on a process working together with National Treasury, DPME and COGTA to look at how those four departments can better coordinate in terms of policy implementation as well as M&E. And the problem that we are addressing was that there was lack of coherence, especially sometimes at a policy level. I think the portfolio committee in the previous sitting have raised the challenges, for example, between the PFMA and the Public Service Act. And those are some of the things that we are trying to do by coordinating how these four departments, which are also referred to as the center of government departments, can work together. We are also in the process of producing a white paper for the transformation and modernization of public administration. The committee will remember that in 1995, the white paper on the transformation of the public service was issued, which guided the number of policies that we have today. The main aim of the paper at the time was to introduce reforms as we were moving away from the old government to the new one. So the special focus was on issues of equity, representation, and looking at how do we make sure that the public service is representative of all South Africans. 20 plus years on, we are now looking at how to modernize public administration. So the whole process is going to be centered around reviewing what were the goals and objectives that were set in 1995, whether we've achieved them, but also looking at where the South African public service is and what is required now to modernize. So IT is going to be one of the reforms that we are introducing, the uptake of IT. Reviewing, for example, whether the decentralization of HR was a good idea, because some of the non-compliance that we are finding in the HR space is that there's either a poor interpretation or understanding of policies, as well as the poor implementation of policies, and as a result, we're seeing a spike rather than stabilization of compliance in the public service. The one target, the targets that were not achieved, I'll just go through them and combine them. The target one and two, we are in the process of doing regulations to implement the PAMA Act. And to be able to implement any act, you need regulations to be in place. So as part of the what is regulated in PAMA is the Office of Standards, as well as the technical assistance unit that deals with discipline, ethics, and integrity. So we have gazetted the regulations in November. The gazetting process allows 30 days for input. So we will be able to, in the next quarter, appraise the committee as to how far we are with the regulations. Minister, I think, as part of his first meeting, did indicate that his main preoccupation is going to be ensuring that we fully implement PAMA. So part of doing these regulations, therefore, is ensuring that we are able to implement and regulate all the areas that are prescribed in the Act. We are also addressing an old age problem that was raised by the Portfolio Committee and committees before this one, around the lack of integration between the performance of departments and the performance of officials. The AG has from time to time raised with the committee that we seem to not be focusing more on the performance of departments but focusing on individuals, and most of the time those two do not tally. So we find people getting bonuses but the department is not performing. So what we are then doing is engaging with the AG to look at what are some of the things that we need to look at that needs to come into the work that the AG is auditing, in particular regulated areas for public administration. But the exercise is also looking more how do you hold heads of departments more accountable for the entire operations of the department, and not just what is in the APP. So this work is ongoing, and we hope that by the time we come back 3 months later, there should be substantive progress, and we'll be able to give a full view to the committee of what is entailed or what is anticipated with this integration. We are also doing work on organizational functionality assessment tools and productivity assessments. Again, linking those two to the performance of HODs because these two tools are assessing the entire operations of an organization, not just the APP. So hence I was combining all of these targets together to explain how they are seeking to improve the assessments so that we are able to achieve 360-degree assessment rather than individual-based ones. The next program is looking at areas of HR and labor relations. What we are demonstrating here is that the program managed to achieve all of its targets. The issue around disciplinary cases and precautionary suspension was raised during the presentation of the PSC, and we have noted the committee's recommendation that there should be more integration between the two reports. But I think I need to mention that the PSC usually talks about cases that they would have been referred. So where there's disputes or where officials are unhappy with the outcomes of their disciplinary cases, they will then refer those to the PSC for further investigation. Heads of departments of all departments are still required to manage discipline management within their department. It's a function that is delegated to them as part of the Public Service Act. But over the years, as the committee is aware, departments have not been able to stick to the prescripts. So, for example, making sure that cases are addressed or finalized within the stipulated 90 days. Although it is not still a good picture, but committee members will remember that in the past we were reporting that the resolutions of cases sometimes took up to 224 or 25 days, and we have managed, I think, as government to be able to, at least at this point, resolve more than half of our cases in the 90 days that's stipulated. Precautionary suspensions and people staying at home up to 2 to 3 years continues to be a problem, not only because it's a financial cost to government, where people at senior management levels, the DDGs and sometimes DGs, are staying at home for more than 4 years paid. So it continues to be an area that we are concerned about. Honorable member earlier mentioned the pool that was approved by Cabinet in 2013. Although this was a good development, the challenge is that pool is public servants that are actually employed in their own government departments. So they're able to assist each other when their caseloads are not that bad. So we are still looking at other interventions that can be implemented through the technical assistance unit. And maybe just to add that we are currently also focusing on other measures around the discipline space, which is your lifestyle audits. So once the unit is fully capacitated, we'll be able to ramp up the capacity that we give to departments to deal with their cases. And just in passing, the misconduct cases will then relate to issues around dishonesty, irregular expenditure, sexual harassment, and subordination, etc. We also are busy working on the supporting departments on the proper implementation of the PMDS policy. I mentioned that a bit earlier, I won't go into detail, but the PMDS policy for SMS members previously, DGs, DDGs, directors and chief directors used to be assessed using one tool. And there was a challenge that you can't hold the director accountable for the same areas that the DG is accountable for, that you should be able to see that a DG has more responsibilities and accountability than a director. So the PMDS policy was since revised and adopted by approved by Cabinet about 2 years ago. But we're finding that departments are still struggling to use the new tool. So it's part of the change management process that is ongoing. And indicated there was when we did those workshops, one of the concerns was around the HODs of the departments that have merged as part of the NMOC process. And we are dealing with that issue with the presidency as well as the council, where we are also attending to the employees that will be affected through the merger of departments. But it has been signed as a resolution, and it is guided by those processes. Once there is some movement, we should be able to come back to the committee in the next reporting to tell you, give you a picture of what we are dealing with. The whole intention around NMOC was to realize more efficiencies in government, where we had a proliferation of departments split where there was no need to split them. So the departments have been put together, but I think the labor relations issues then is that we are going to have staff that are going to be declared in access, where we'll be sitting with two DDGs, two CFOs, two HR managers. So part of taking the matter to council is to ensure that no employee loses their job, but that once the departments have placed who they need in their structures, there will be processes of looking at placing the access staff in positions and not to prejudice them as part of these measures. The housing scheme continues to be implemented, and as at the end of September, we had 766 employees who are eligible to receive housing allowance and who are using their allowance for home ownership. In the previous reports that we brought to the committee, we had raised the concern that public servants that qualify for housing allowance, I think it's from level 9 to 10, are not actually using that money to buy houses, but they are still renting. We are seeing an improvement to that, because part of implementing this work was also assisting employees to get out of debt, because the main problem why they are not able to access home loans, for example, is either because they are indebted, or they have been blacklisted, and they can't access the credit that they need. The fourth program is what we call Government Chief Information Officer, which is looking at IT issues for the entire public service. We are ramping up the implementation of e-government initiatives. There was a very low performance in this area, and we are now partnering with the relevant departments, including the Presidential Council, which is working with the issues of Fourth Industrial Revolution. And we are trying to capacitate the directors and chief directors of IT to invest more in ensuring that the expenditure in IT is geared towards enabling government to offer services online. So the current expenditure in IT, for example, we are spending about 36 billion rands a year across the public service. However, this doesn't necessarily translate into the services being offered online. We still have a few government departments like your Home Affairs. I think SEPS has also started making sure that some of the services, you can access them using your mobile devices. So the intention is that we try and steer government away from just frivolous expenditure, but making sure that whatever systems they procure are intended for improving service delivery. We also work in the area of information and security of IT systems, which was an area that was raised sharply by the AG, where it was found that the government systems, IT systems, are not well secured. And we have since put in place a number of legislative frameworks, including security standards that must apply to all the systems that government either develops themselves or if they procure them from outside. The second last program, Chair, is what we call service delivery support. 6 quarterly targets, 5 of which were achieved. These included supporting departments in implementing the operations management framework, which is a framework that helps government to map up their business processes and to see how those can be re-engineered to offer services quickly. So an example is what has happened with Home Affairs, where it will take up to 2 months to get your ID We are now able to get IDs within 2 weeks. So this was part of the work that the PSA has done with departments to try and see how we can streamline the work that we're doing and cut the time that it takes to offer services to citizens. The word that the portfolio committee doesn't want to hear is the Maponya Mall. So I won't talk about Maponya Mall, but I will talk about the intention of Maponya Mall and what it has led us to. So through the piloting of that center in Johannesburg, Soweto, we were able to come up with a framework for how the Tusong centers must be established, maintained, and how you need to make sure that there is a good management governance framework as well as the financing framework for those. So we have started now workshopping that framework in the different provinces that I mentioned. And the intention is that we want to take this framework to cabinet for approval so that it can then guide going forward at a provincial and a municipal level how Tusong service centers need to be designed, managed, and what governance arrangements need to be in place. I won't talk about this, but maybe just clump them together, that one of the priorities for the sixth administration is to look at how do we improve the implementation of Batupili. In the past, Batupili used to be something that public servants are very good at reciting the eight principles, but you couldn't actually tell when you go and assess the services that they deliver that they are indeed implementing Batupili as it should. So over the past 2 years, we have taken each principle and developed standards so that when you go to a department and you assess the implementation of that principle, the standards that you can tick to see that they are actually implementing it. But we are also actually also in the process of reviewing the actual Batupili program in its entirety to see if it's still relevant or maybe there's other areas that need to be added, especially given the fact that it has not necessarily translated into changing the behavior and performance of public servants when they deliver services. The one target that we have not managed to achieve is the service delivery model for the public service. The DPSA over the past 10, 15 years has been responsible for supporting departments to implement service delivery improvement plans. But we've realized that it was a one-size-fits-all model and it didn't necessarily work because the service typology of departments is different. We have departments that are policy departments and departments that are actually implementing direct services, transactional services to citizens. So we have since revised that and are now doing a sector-based approach where you'll have a service delivery plan for the particular sector, the health sector, the education sector, which takes into account the different dynamics of that sector, the services that are delivered, and also the clients that are being served by that department. The last program had one achieved target for the quarter, and that is the establishment of the head of the national administration and head of the public service. In short, I think it's important to mention to the committee that this is with reference to DGs and heads of departments whose career incidences are managed by the president, so they are hiring, issues around their discipline, and all other career incidences. The committee would have been aware in the past years that we've had a number of DGs that were taking their ministers to court, where ministers have disciplined them, fired them, or put them under precautionary suspensions. And some of the DGs has actually won their cases because that delegation resides with the president. So the president, when a minister wants to fill the post of a DG, they have to be authorized by the president to do that. When they want to discipline a DG, they need to be authorized, delegated that power by the president. But it was also looking at the lack of stability in the appointment of DGs. In the work that we have done to monitor the turnover rate, we have found that of the 5-year contract that DGs serve, the majority of them only
stay here for about 2 years, 9 months in their post, and that creates a lot of instability. But it was also putting this idea in place that you'll have one head of public administration and public service. Public administration includes the public service, and then at a provincial level we'll also have a similar arrangement where there's a person appointed to deal specifically with the recruitment of DGs, with their performance management, as well as any disciplinary measures that need to be put in place. It's a project that we're doing together with the presidency, with DPME in particular, and we should be able to, in the future, once there is some conclusion and cabinet approval of the proposals that have been made, be able to appraise the committee. One of the issues that is still being debated is where this head of national administration need to reside, whether it should be in the presidency or in DPSA. So those are part of the work that is being done, and clarity and decisions around the location, the function, and the scope of that head will be able to be finalized once the cabinet has approved the proposals that have been put forward. This brings me to the end of my part of the presentation. Chair, with your permission, I'd like to ask the CFO to quickly take us through the financial report. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. There was the last slide. Quickly, at the end of December, we were sitting at 55 vacancies, which translated to 12.9 of 429 filled posts in the department. What we want to indicate, as the Deputy Minister earlier alluded, is that we have since appointed, or the Minister has appointed the DG for the department, but also the organizational structure of the department was approved in December. It was more a reconfiguration, and that structure has resulted in two things. We have reduced the number of branches in the department from 6 to 5, but we have also reduced the number of vacant posts at SMS level. So we should be able, once the structure is implemented from the 1st of September, to also reduce this number of 55, hopefully to zero, or a manageable number that takes us to less than 10% of our vacancy rate. We have, although we have not achieved the target of 48, of 50% for females at SMS level, we are currently now at 48. In the previous quarters, we were hovering around 41 and 42%. But we are hopeful that with the new appointments that we have done, we would have at least reached the 50%. We are still doing relatively well in terms of persons living with disabilities, at 3.8% of the targeted 2% of government. Now I've come to the end. I then will hand over to the CFO chair. Thanks. Okay.
Thank you, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members again. Just quickly on the finances, the slide 44, I'll deal with the one that is on the on the biscope there. The slide indicates basically the way the DPSA funding in terms of the vote has been spread. The composition of employees budget, which is the salaries budget, is 3 million, which takes about 31% of the chunk of the budget. Goods and services, which is operational budget, is 178 million, which is 17% or 18% of the budget. And the biggest chunk of the budget goes to transfers and subsidies, which is transfers that we make to three departments. That is the Public Service Commission, the National School of Government, as well as the CPSI. They've already presented. What we do here, we don't present the expenditure, we only present what we have transferred to them. They have already presented to you, members, honorable members, in terms of that. And a small chunk goes to capital asset. The next slide deals with how the department has performed. As at the end of December, we have spent around 68% of the budget. We ideally supposed to be at around 75% of the budget. But I think the main issues around the underspending in that in this quarter is under administration, which is 56%. We've got about 88 million that we still have to process. We're just finalizing the paperwork, which we have to process to DPWI, which is the office accommodation for the EM. And that is, I think, that is the main one that will actually push the ensure that we don't really underspend. The other underspending mainly is around program three, which is public service employment and condition, and this is basically because of the government employee housing scheme, where it's actually allocated a budget under that program. They have been slow in terms of spending, but it's only in terms of their own administrative expenditure that they need to spend. That is the one that is a bit slow. I think even the last financial year, they actually underspent. The rest of the project, the programs, Honorable Chair and the Honorable Members, are actually in line with what we are we have projected. In fact, if I can give you the figures, up to last week, when I looked at the figures, we are now at around 85% spent of the budget, and hopefully we'll get into the acceptable spending which National Treasury requires as we close the financial year at 31 March. We're still processing a lot of invoices from CETA, which have been outstanding, and we're still following up on that, and other projects that are taking place in the last quarter would be processed. The last, the pillow part of the that slide indicates the departments that have already, and I call them departments and not entities, because basically they have got their own DGs or accounting officers. What I just want to mention to honorable members is that if from this year, April, you will not see National School of Government as well as Public Service Commission presented under this slide. They have now been allocated their own votes as by Treasury, by National Treasury. You will also recall that Public Service Commission basically is not an entity. It's a Chapter, I think, 10 institution. They report directly to Parliament. There were some issues around the fact that why is their budget comes through a department as if we actually dictate what they need to do as an independent institution. Now they've been allocated their own vote. You won't see any allocation that is coming, so their allocation will be coming directly from Treasury to them, as well as National School of Government, though the Minister for Public Service and Administration is still responsible for National School of Government, but they have been allocated and their own vote. So from the first quarter of the financial year, we'll only be dealing with basically DPSA budget, as well as Center for Public Service Innovation. That is the only transfer that we'll be dealing with. That's what I just wanted to highlight, honorable members. The next slide indicates basically the same information that I've indicated, but we are just indicating it in terms of economic classification, compensation of employees, the amount of 303 million that I've indicated. We have spent already in salaries 214, which is 70%. Of the budget. As I indicated, we ideally are supposed to be at 75% yet this quarter, but I think 5% less of that is because of the vacant funded post that the acting DG has indicated earlier on, and the issue of restructuring that realignment of the structure that has been now sorted out between ourselves and the minister. Goods and services, as I indicated, some of the reason is in terms of what we are still processing, the invoice for DPW and other invoices that we are following up with CETA and other projects that are taking place. As I indicated, now we are already around 85%. Transfers and subsidies, we are on top of it. It's we're indicating basically what we have transferred to those three departments at 75%. As well as payment for capital assets. That brings us to 68% at that quarter. The next slide, we just indicated in terms of graphic form, the composition of employees' budget, which is indicated in blue versus the expenditure. that is indicated in red. The last slide that I want to deal with, Honorable Chair and Honorable Members, is just in terms of administrative matters, the compliance issues basically, which are really important for a government and a department. The 30 days payment from the beginning of the financial year up to today, not only up to December, up to today, we don't have any invoices that we did not process within 30 days. In fact, our average payment is about 18 days with suppliers. So we are in compliance with that. We have been compliant with that for the past 5 years or so, and AG has not raised any matter around that. Unauthorized expenditure, no unauthorized expenditure for the entire year up to today. Fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we don't have any up to today. You will, the honorable members, maybe will record, will, if they have looked at the second quarter report, maybe they will have a question around the fact that there was an amount of 2,500 that was 600 that was indicated as a fruitless and wasteful expenditure. It was because of one of the our employees who missed a shuttle somewhere abroad. But when we investigated the matter, we realized that he was actually at fault. We actually recovered that money from him, from his salary. He accepted. We recovered it, and that is in line with the PFMA. You investigate, you recover, or you write off. So those are the three options that you do. So we did not write off in this case. We recovered from him. He accepted after we have investigated. So we don't have any fruitless and wasteful expenditure as up to today. Irregular expenditure as well, we don't have any cases of irregular expenditure that have been identified in terms of our controls up to today. All this that I'm indicating, Honorable Chair and members, is also subject to the last audit by Auditor General at the end of May when we submit our financial statements. But we are confident that in terms of our internal process, we have not identified anything, and we hopefully believe that even AG will actually concur with us. That's what we are actually presenting to you. That's the end of my presentation, Honorable Chair. Thanks.
Honorable TV, TB Lesoma, Nduli, Clark, and Mutsipe.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Let me the first one to welcome the presentations by DPSA and Innovation. Honorable Chair, on DPSA, I'm just concerned about the staff or the employees that are unable to get the housing allowance because of being indebted or being blacklisted. Does the department by any chance have maybe a program where you are taking the employees through financial advice or whatsoever? Because I know all of us at the end of our time would want to leave a house or something for our kids behind. But in the event where I'm unable to get out of my debt, how am I going to access what I wanted to leave behind for my kids? There is also this case that has been raised by the department about the DGs being some of them taking ministers to court, and some won the cases and all of that. It's solely the responsibility of the president. Does that also apply to provincial DGs, or is it only at the national level? On internal audit and risk management, issues raised by the internal audit and risk management, among others, were that there was no evidence that procurement contracts were checked and endorsed by the legal service unit. How is this allowed to happen when there must be commitment to root out corruption? What if this loophole will lead to bad governance and corruption? Have these contracts been investigated if there was no corruption activity involved? On innovation, I hope that the feasibility study is going to be finished soon, so that you can move, because really it's also one other thing that is delaying. But I want to applaud you for the good work that you have done thus far. On design and online publication of the revised pocket guidance, a guide. Since the design and online publication of the revised pocket guide could not be achieved due to loss of internal design capacity, will outsourcing of this task not cause budgetary challenges? When will the center have its internal capacity restored? My second one, on transfer of the CPSI. What caused this new development? Is the center closing down? If so, will the department be able to carry out the function performed by the center presently? I thank you, Chairperson.
Chair, for me, I would say that probably we would not necessarily expect responses. We'll get them in writing. We're just raising them for record purposes. Probably, Chair, the NSG also must interview the DPSA CFO to say how do you make it in terms of the AG's areas of emphasis, because we are doing well, because we are not only DPSA of ourselves internally as a department, but we are DPSA servicing all departments through the public services as well. And I think there's a good lesson that you can learn. It doesn't matter how much of it, because with all the compliance and regulations are the same across the board. That's one. So I'm saying in a unique way that I'm congratulating them, Chair.
Okay.
Yeah, but also we must learn and also share experiences. That's one. Two, Chair, is the employee compensation. I would like probably one of the good days in our hectic schedule, Chair, that to get a separate presentation on CNOV, SALGA, and its status, as it were, and its impact on public service pension funds. That sense of comfort, I know that there's that joint committee, but it clashes with our committee. None of us are able to get that privilege. But also the pension fund, we are more or less also one of the custodians in terms of oversighting on that. If we may, we can be very happy, and I'm sure your good office also will arrange that. Chair, the other one that I would like quickly to talk about, probably on a positive note, is the issue of people with disabilities. That I could see that you have, it's like how many, 14%? It's more than 10, to be honest, if I say. It's 3 point something, or it's minus 10, 3 point something, but from 2. But probably for where I'm seated, I would love also to know there are different disabilities. I will tell you why. Recently, the president also has added the sign language as one of, which is one of the disabilities, as it were. But also there are various disabilities, by the way. So one, but I'm saying that there's a good work, job well done in that space. In terms of public service commission, is it then going to be a standalone in terms of transfers and all that? Probably this one is a carry over to the Public Service Commission, and they must respond. The implication of the legislative reforms that they are working on with the ministry, what does it say? Chair. No, let me leave this one. The other one that DPSA must assist through you, Chair, DM, is the recycling of DGs. Because there must be something that says that gives us a good reason as government to say we recycle this DG warm body because he has also performed better in this department. I'm sure because we can't keep on recycling people who are failures from somewhere and just transfer, because it cannot be not difficult for dealing with a person who is a non-performer. But if you don't very consistently and timely your performance management tools, you applied to the T and the support within that time. Because we cannot be performing this way if they're good performers. The very last one, Chair, hopefully. The rest, Chair, I will send them in writing. But also the 38 billion,
that is in your report, probably when you've got time in terms of your IT, that is across the public services as it were, we should also say these are the issues that in terms of the targets and phases and how far we are. I know IT can consume or have more money that you can also see the value add. We've been talking about this thing even the last 10 p.m. and we should have moved somewhere to see the end result of what we're investing. Thank you, Chair.
Chair, we welcome both presentations from Center of the Innovations and the Department. Chair, but firstly with the Center of Innovation, there is not much that one can say because we have a bona jibuti bange negleli kulula mambazo iti homeless. So, okay. Abazaz banda, which bami pezwan, abazaz which bami pezwan, hoping which mabewele lagi, nabobazo manganya o zombie, bakwaz, they can, onge which ba understand, ile ba understand, ebe whoopi. So, ngatike, le yabo can be facet, which nabobazaz, which banguban. Lapha ku department I think umamkibi ubazile uthasha indawana eziningana but I wanted to emphasize entweni ye in terms of the departments not doing well but senior management baba thole bonus ukuthi you get the bonus because wenze kahle yini oyenze kahle if the department is not doing well. I think more needs to be digged down there ukuthi uyawayithola ke but wenze kuphi because wena usebenza ku department. If your department is not doing well, how can you and uti do well? You see, if that one can be digged down. And secondly, it goes back to this thing, Ms. Lady C. Ishola Peguchi, the working environment, the department, apparently impacting to some of the things because umuntu thola I bonus sometimes my favoritism not because kukhona nto yinhle no nto nkulu ayenzile yabona. Then ngifuna ukugcina ukuthi angigcini izimbini eyokuqala ngoba izimbini is that mina I wish DPSA as Induna Enkulu, you will be in a position really to sensitize departments in terms of previous achievements. You'll remember Wuti towards 2015, Sasinama MTGs. Yenzenja, how did AMA departments, kuma priorities, performed? Sipikele kuma SDGs now. And here we are, sitole ne nukuzane. By the way, sipela ugu congratulator, u minister in absentia. Emu shepe sinji. Laka gu afra. Yes. Uguti, kagu we peer review in the true sense in terms of the goals. Are the departments really achieving? So if the if DPSA can start sensitizing AMA departments, maybe we can have a peer review that will be
an eye-opener, a peer review that really is is popping from the ground, other than Langanisa 101 kube 11. Mhlawumbe sivume ukuthi 101 kuzoba u 2, yabo. Singathi 1 ababili sebeyenza u 11, yabo. No, CFO, your slide, your last slide, is really leading by example. There is no fruitless expenditure, etc., etc. Now, those are the things that we should be monitoring, strictly monitoring to our department. Because our department, if DPSA, part of DPME, zingabamba ngezandla zombili. U-AG akazuba nazo lezi zinto ahenga ngazo ama-department. Because i-department itshelwa la ukuthi go and correct 1, 2, 3. Uyafika u-AG ama-slate noko awalona i-report laka-first year ukuthi kubi, 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 yabo. They are able to say kubi lungisa lana la. Kubi, kubi, kubi. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Clerk.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would also like to request that we get a report from the department in terms of departments that are not performing yet, performance bonuses have been allowed for. It would be good to see which are those departments. And then secondly, Jay, I've done oversight myself over a numerous amount of Tucson centres. And I must tell you, I'm glad to hear they're going to look at restructuring these centres, because firstly, if you go onto the website, half of them can't be found according to what the website information is. Firstly, that's what I found with the ones in KwaZulu-Natal when I did those oversights. Secondly, I did an oversight in an area called Magababa in Natal. And I must tell you, that Tucson Centre, fantastic centre that's been built there, but it really doesn't service the community the way it should. And when I saw it, I thought, this is a wonderful model to bring services to grassroots levels, and particularly in areas where people can't just get into their cars and drive to Home Affairs and so forth. But I can tell you they're not delivering that, the ones that I've seen. So this centre, no SLAs have been put in place for the past 12 years since it's been there. So there's really no accountability between all the departments that are supposed to provide these services to the community. And so that really needs to be looked at. There's no rental agreements that have been put in place. I was there at about 11 o'clock in the morning when the Department of Social Development hadn't even arrived yet. And people were sitting there, queuing there with queries around pensions and social grants and so forth, and weren't being assisted. And, there's at this centre there were many kiosks where there could be some kind of trade and job creation provided on the area, and none of those kiosks were open, and they just seemed derelict. And so, for me, I always believe you go on the ground and you go and look at these things to see for yourself what's going on. So when we do the restructuring, we really need to ensure that SLAs and lease agreements and those things are put in place so that people are held accountable when they should be at work. I think at that centre it was only SASA and local government that we found that was functioning well to assist community. And I just thought this is such a great model opportunity to actually service people on the ground that can't reach those services. So I'm very passionate about seeing that those centres actually produce what they should produce. Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Mutsipe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I would like to go back to the question that I asked earlier from the NSG, that there have been implemented the increased the level from level four and five. And then, but now, when I come to Department of Public Service and Administration, it says that I was pleased before saying that if now the level has been increased, it will be much better for the employees to get the bonds and whatsoever. But now when you come to DPSA, it says that the people who qualify to have bonds, they are from level 9 to 10. It means that they are far, they weren't able to get bonds. And then what will happen? Working for so long for the government, and then at the end of the day, your kids will just left unattended, homeless, and whatsoever. So I feel that really that needs to be revised, that the RDPs are for the unemployed. So you are still working, but you can't able to afford to get a bond. So what is the use to work for the government? Because you don't belong anywhere. Unemployed, you don't belong. You are employed, still you are nowhere. So really, this needs to be changed and looked into. And the other thing, the second one for Head of Department Performance Management is the Performance Management and Development System for Head of Department is one area wherein the department must not lack. There was an outcry regarding the turnover rate for heads of department, and that the political administrative interference was a challenge. How can these challenges be normalized when the piloting of the system to assess the performance of heads of department is lagging behind? Thank you very much.
Honorable members, as I have indicated that there will be a meeting here at 1, I suggest that answers to your question must be sent to the secretary. Do the replies in writing. Send them to the secretary of the committee, then it will get to all of us. Before Wednesday next week, it will be there. Remember, we have a meeting again next week of the committee. Thank you very much, honorable members. The meeting stands adjourned.